All of the views and opinions expressed here are those of the individual speaking and may not be representative of Coding American. At times, language may be considered vulgar. Listener discretion is suggested.
You are now listening to the Coding Behind the Wheel podcast.
What is up? Happy Wheel Wednesday. I'm Scott from Coding, and with me is my pal, Jared.
Jared Coding.
Yeah. He's here.
We could
We're
both
here.
Say the name.
Yeah, why not? Double amplification. Hope that this Wednesday finds you well, and I don't know. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. This is a good time to do that whole like and subscribe business. If you are here, make sure you throw the thumbs up and go ahead and subscribe.
Turn those notifications on.
Ooh.
Right?
Yeah, well played.
Get the trifecta.
Yeah. So basically, we're just looking for some people to hang out with us, and while we do that, there may be some cool giveaways and some other things that are going on the channel. Plus, we've been putting up a piece of content every week in addition to our podcast, and we hope to bring that around even again. So we're hoping to maybe get two pieces of content plus our podcast in coming weeks. So stay tuned. We're trying to do some stuff, and we're trying not to make it super boring. So you'll have to tell us how we did on that. Today we're going to be talking about developing wheels. You know, we have a lot of questions about wheels that we have coming out this year. What status is on them? And we also have a lot of questions where people ask, about the whole process. How does it work? Why does it take so long? Or what kind of different things are going on? So,
or why isn't it easier to do?
Yeah. So we'll try to have a conversation about that and kind of give you the insight. Also, if you have any questions that relate to wheel development or really anything at all, feel free to throw them in, and we'll do our best to answer them as we kind of go through today's podcast. So I guess without saying, let's start with a little recap action, right?
Okay.
So this year, we've heard a lot about people saying, when are you releasing your 2021 wheels? So we spoke about this early on. We said to you that we were going to be releasing a forge line. That designs are done. We're finishing up a lot of the details. Packaging, literature, odds and ends, accessories, that's getting finished. And it's just taking a little bit longer just due to a lot of the things that are happening all over the world with the ramifications from COVID. So development's taking a little bit longer on, the whole packaging side and stuff.
All around, yeah.
Yeah. And then in addition to that, we do have two new flow-formed wheels and one new mainline wheel that are done and basically almost at that point of being able to show you. What we're trying to do right now is just finalize some of the development that's we had to put on hold for a little bit last year because of the fact that the whole COVID thing was going on, and we were trying to make sure that we were working as hard as we could to get you your product that you ordered last year. So we continue to, really prioritize our current wheels. And there was some things that got delayed going on for this year's wheels. So
even then, wasn't it really challenging to get customers' current wheels because of all the holdups at the ports and whatnot? Like, independently of whether it was a new wheel or a current wheel, right?
Yeah, so last year was interesting in the sense that last year we didn't have any problem producing wheels.
Why are you happy?
I always get tired of the podcast. Anyhow, we didn't have any problems producing wheels last year. We had problems with other things, and we've talked about this in other podcasts, right? Some people said, oh, is there a delay in the wheels? Not really on the wheels. I remember at one point they were like, oh, like, we're done with the wheels, but we can't ship them because we don't have enough boxes. Like, this box supplier got stuck because the box supplier ran out of paint. Like, that got delayed. And then it was like diamond cutting bits for some of the wheels, and those got delayed. So it's like we had wheels finished, but we couldn't finish machining them. there was a lot of that stuff that happened last year. But then you, like you spoke about the port congestion. So we were constantly trying to manipulate and work, you know, four times as hard to do the same job to try to make sure that we got all of our product here in a reasonable amount of time. And we really did a very, very good job of that. In the big picture, we had a lot of people working very hard to do whatever they could to still make sure that we had the wheels that were ordered in the building. So so that is 100% what happened last year. Now, this year, it seems like, man, this year is going to be tough. And I'm not saying necessarily just for us, but for many, many, many companies and many industries globally. What's happening right now is like there's this global port congestion thing that's happening. And, you know, there's, you know, if you're getting anything sourced from any, you know, other part of the world, what could potentially happen is the space on some of these ships is extremely limited. And, you know, when you have a 3 or 4 week delay on one side and then it gets to port and they're so backed up with receiving things because there's like global equipment shortages and they can't receive the goods for a couple weeks. So now you added a month and a half on the transit time. So that's what, you know, I think you're going to see. You know, I've started to see it. You know, I had recently just done some stuff and I needed plumbing fittings, and there was a lot of PVC and black pipe, you know, fittings.
Shortages.
Yeah. Like I went to Lowe's and they were like, oh, we haven't seen this stuff in weeks.
Jeez.
And we don't know when we're going to get it.
Is it, I'm wondering, I don't know the answer, but
yeah.
Is it an issue of the fact that they just don't have enough manpower to handle it? Or is it like, what is the holdup? I mean, yeah. Obviously we're in really challenging times, but I'm wondering, like, is that,
yeah,
you
so
know, is
I,
that the primary reason?
So here's the thing. I think that the issue really is less on the manpower thing and more on equipment shortage things. Now, I'll be the first to tell you that I really don't know if I can understand the complete ramifications of how equipment shortage starts.
Well, let's take a step back. By equipment shortage, you mean what specifically?
We're talking about trucks, chassis, actual ships.
Jeez.
Right? And so what happens is, and I don't care, so let's see. So actually CMSGT4 has a comment.
Right.
He said a lot of companies and countries put bans and holds on US shipping, which has affected a lot. Yeah, I'd imagine that that's completely accurate. However, I will go as far to say that from what we can see, it's not just like the equipment shortage doesn't seem to be as much from US to other countries. It seems to be from other countries to here. He says they lost a whole ship recently and it flipped and sank. And I believe that that's the case. And that happens every once in a while. I mean, there's a reason that companies have you know, sea freight.
Insurance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's because that does happen. I mean, it's an unfortunate, but think about how top heavy those ships are.
Just to add insult to injury too, right?
Right.
Like you have these trying times, you have, you know, all these delays, and then your ship sinks after all this.
Do you
like,
remember, I don't know if you remember it a few years ago, they had, not a few years ago, it was probably almost 10 years ago now, Porsche lost like a whole boatload of cars, like somewhere in the Atlantic right now are
pun
a bunch
intended.
Of brand new 911s.
Oh my God.
You know? Just like totally destroyed. But you know, there that happens from time to time. I know it happened to Hyundai just probably 7 or 8 years ago. They lost, you know, in rough seas, you know, they started losing containers. I mean, they lost a lot of cars off of ships. So
jeez.
That stuff happens. I mean, that's just the nature of, you know, bringing the good old boat over.
And then you see him a couple years later on Craigslist that, you know, just has like water damage, you know, for sale, salvage title.
No, you're going to need more than that. But equipment shortage. So I think what equipment shortage essentially manufactures itself down to is that I would imagine from there was I would imagine there was a lot of shipping lines that because, you know, there were so many things that were you're not able to be produced and there were so many issues that caused by COVID, different things, they couldn't make things. Those ships may have been leased to an extent. Same thing with aircraft. That's how airlines go out of business. I don't know if anybody really knows that, but what seems to be the tipping point, and I would imagine it's very similar, is why I'm talking about it.
Right.
You get an airline that starts out and they're financed the kingdom come. You know, like they don't own those aircraft that they're flying on. They're leased or they're rented.
Mm.
Right. And then they're rebranded on the side. It says it's whatever. So it looks like it's their aircraft.
Because newsflash, airplanes are expensive.
Right. Right. Especially when you need like a few hundred of them at one time. So what happens is these companies, you know, either they're liquidated and they purchase them from other companies that are going out of business or have too many planes. Like let's say hypothetically, you know, one airline has, you know, 26 extra planes that are grounded. They're not really using anymore. They may lease them to another airline.
Sublease.
Well, no, because they may own them. Who knows? What they're, okay, but, you right. know, so in very basic, they may lease them to another another airline so that they can pay them monthly to, and then you figure, you know, you're getting X amount of revenue off of flights and then you continue to pay your bills. Very similar to how a car lease would work.
Right.
Well, what happens is when the revenue stops, like has happened with airlines so much lately, where they just can't get enough flights, and that's why the prices are down through the bottom. They're just trying to maintain,
like break even.
Well, yeah, I mean, think about it like this: you put an you send an aircraft up in the air, and it costs, let's say, it costs, you know, I mean, fictitious numbers, I don't know, $20,000 an hour to fly or whatever it may be, or $8,000 an hour, whatever it is. You know, the first class passengers and all the expensive seats, those pretty much are where they make their money. And then all the rest of the seats are just to try to amortize the fuel and operating costs to fly the plane, right?
Right.
So basically, I would imagine there was a lot of cruise line, you know, a lot of ship lines and different things like that essentially lost their companies, went out of business or whatever, because they couldn't maintain the ability to pay their bills, right? That would be my guess. And anyhow, this equipment shortage has manufactured itself in a whole mess of issues all over the world. So I think, you know, I mean, I had a lot of stuff. I mean, I think you're going to start seeing this to be a regular problem in everyday life with every product. And I think this year is going to be, you know, something that we're going to, it's going to be a new voyage, like a new, that's not it's going to be a new issue that I think every company will have to start to learn how to deal with and work on. But anyhow, from trying to put our length in last year and really, you know, continue to make sure our supply was there, this year, you know, like we're just delayed getting these designs done. And that spawned the question. You know, we get a lot of questions about how long do the designs take and different things like that. I would say, you know, on average, like I'll start working on a design somewhere around February for the following year, right? So
after SEMA, essentially, right?
Yeah, sometime after SEMA, you know, I start loosely working with thoughts about, you know, what would be cool or where a hole is or... You know, and there are a lot of things that spawn that thought, right? Like, you know, where do you start? Like, sometimes it's, you know, there's some other wheels that we know even may sell well still that we're like, all right, you know, it's time for them to go away.
Right.
You know? We've
shout out to our discontinued video.
Right, yeah, which is up right now. Go over to YouTube and, you're on YouTube probably. but, you know, check out our channel. And we put out this piece about discontinued wheels, some frequently asked questions that we get about them.
Right.
But we start, you know, working on wheels and we start, you know, trying to get our situation moving, getting the ball rolling.
Yeah.
Right. Early in the year, and we know that that's going to be for next year. And then basically what happens is we kind of start to, you know, play with different thoughts or ideas. We look for the voids that we have in our line or maybe fitments. You know, and we say to you guys all the time that your feedback is so important, and we really do take it very seriously, because that feedback really translates sometimes where we look at it and we go, is this something that makes sense for us? Can we do this? Like, you know, logistically, does it make sense? And we keep all those notes, and we try to see, like, where does it mix in, right? Like, where does it work for us? And we start working on these designs. And they are pretty loose, I would say, through April. Like, from there to April, we've kicked around a lot of different ideas. And then we roughly come up with a somewhat what's the right thing? We come up with, like, roughly, like, a, like, all right, we know what it's going to look like.
Right, the and ones then, that essentially pass the test.
Well, you know, the visual test, right? Like, and usually, and up until this point, you know, because I know that we had a question from Matt. Shout out to our boy Matt. And he basically said, how many people would review a design or look at a design before we would approve it? So it's not really a set number. You know, we really have a much smaller, you know, focus, guys. It's really the hardcore car guys are the ones that will kind of be around, and we'll kind of look at things like, ah, that's no good, that's good. I mean, listen, we have made, and I've said this before, we've made so many wheel designs that we just will probably never see the light of day.
Well, and you know something, this just sort of jogged a question for me, because, you know, again, I'm relatively new here. Is there any sort of incorporation that you do to finalize the process where you render them onto cars? Like, does rendering them onto cars at all factor into, you know, the decision process?
No, I mean, it never has for me. That's an interesting thought. I don't know if it would change my opinion, because I don't think rendering them onto cars, you know, you can make anything in a rendering look good. You know, because you could stick it where it hypothetically doesn't belong. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I would say for the most part, you know, you look at wheels all day long, but we do render them out. You know,
That's why I asked that question.
We render the wheels out, and when we're starting to get closer, before we, you know, while we're doing the design details without the fitment stuff in there yet, we are constantly doing 3D rendering, so we can turn the wheel around and move it around and kind of show exactly what it looks like.
Well, yeah, and that's, again, that's what sort of begged that question for me, was like, a lot of car designers, that's, you know, that's what they do up until the point where, you know, they clay it out and do that.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe that was something you guys might do, but
yeah,
I guess so, not.
And we've talked a few times about, you know, I mean, the problem is that we want to be able to make something actual, but the idea of integrating 3D printing into our design and development area to be able to physically look and hold the wheel prior to actually, you know, getting a mold made or developing a program for it.
Well, now, see, CMS GT4 thinks I might be onto something.
Let's see what he said. I want to get to his question before that, but
right.
I think seeing wheels with modern cars to see how cohesive they are with the, yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think that there may be something to it. I also think that the wheels that we make, for the most part, we're kind of in a niche where we know what the flavor is. It's just and you know. I can't explain this well enough. I think for me, though, you know, and for, like, you know, for Joe, who, you know, who's been here for a long time, and Jim, we have this weird ability after so many years of going through 2D drawings and then seeing them come as final products, that you start to really, like, you really be able to visualize how the wheel is going to look, even from flat drawings. Now that we have the ability to have 3D drawings and really move everything around, you know, even in an early stage, you really have a good idea of how this wheel is going to look. And especially if you know wheels and how they're going to fit. And, you know, like, to me, an 18.5 out of 25 is an 18.5 out of 25.
Right. But, I mean, design-wise, it might not necessarily look good on certain cars.
Yeah, that's...
Per se.
Yeah, no, I understand.
But that's all subjective.
Yeah, I agree with that. One of the questions that... CMS GT4 also asked was, Are we using SolidWorks for simulated testing in a wheel? So we use a different program, which I'm trying to remember what it is for the FEM testing. But it all starts out in AutoCAD, and then there are a few different FEMs that get kind of conducted. FEM is basically like a computer-aided stress test, and you could do different tests and put in different parameters to kind of see where under certain things, you know, where a wheel stress would be implied and how it would respond.
Similar to, say, like the tests, and I don't know the machinery at all, but like the tests that they do with coilovers.
Well, you mean like the strut?
Like a dyno? Some sort of like machine based stress testing type situation, or is it different than that?
Yeah, it's interesting. Paco just made a comment.
What's up, Paco?
Yeah, shoe designers don't design the shoes around the suits. The shoe by itself should stand out and complement the shoe. Yeah, okay. Complement the suit. Yeah, see, I think that's a great way of summing up. You know, kind of what I guess how we play it, right? Like, we know what wheels are going to fit like. We know what they're going to look like. Our main focus is always trying to make something. I mean, I'm going to make it super simple. Trying to make something that when we look at it, we're like, yeah, that's awesome.
I got you.
I feel like some of the best designs that we've come up with that whether they were the best sellers or not, right? Because we have, you know, what's interesting about the developing wheels, you start to go into this thing where you start developing wheels and you start working on wheels, and we've had wheels that I promise people in person, they look fantastic,
mm-hmm.
and on cars they look great,
mm-hmm.
and whether they sell really really well or just okay. You know, there's sometimes that we know there's a wheel, and I'm like, that did not get enough play. Mm-hmm. Like it just, you know, for whatever reason it was. And when we develop these wheels, it's so important that, you know, we look at it aesthetically, even if it's not our cup of tea,
mm-hmm.
right? There are wheels that we make that I would never put on my car. But that's not because the wheels proportionately aren't good-looking wheels.
Mm.
It's because it's not the right fitment. It's not my style. It's not, you know, it's just not my cup of tea. But we make different flavored teas for everybody.
Right.
Right?
Now you switched from tea to, or from ice cream to tea.
Yeah, we did airplanes before, if you're missing out. But I would say with all these different things, right, I would say that, you know, we start out with these designs around the beginning of the year. They stay loosely with you know, until April, where we're kind of kicking them back and forth. We're making tweaks. I like this radius, this cut would look better, you know, it would really look good if we did this to the PCD. Let's lay the spoke down. Can we make mm-hmm. it more concave? Can we, what about if we made this part convex? What about if this part recessed into the wheel area? Mm-hmm. What about this, like, we do a lot of those, you know, back and forth, change this, change that. Let's do this. How would it look like this? Like, we do a lot of that. And then at some point now comes the technical part, because if you don't start to get onto the technical part, your wheel will never get completed, right? So now we're going into, all right, we need to come up with what sizes we're going to make, what fitments, that means offsets, bolt patterns, widths, right?
Mm-hmm.
We need to figure out what load ratings we're going to need for given applications, because the load rating is going to be a direct effect on how much material you need to use and how light the wheel will be. And many times people say, why didn't you make this wheel lighter? Well, it just doesn't work that way, right? You have a given style and a given design, and when you start going down that path of having that particular style and that design, now you need to make sure that if it's going to go onto this car, it has this load rating. And mm-hmm. anything less of doing that is reckless, right? And you know, our, you know, safety is first and a priority. But, you know, we're not talking about, you know, when you talk about the correct load rating, a lot of times you're not talking about the difference between you know, dead as a wheel bend when I hit a pothole. You're talking about, like, is it going to be safe for a car to utilize?
Right.
So we put all these different technical factors in, and then we have to re-render the thing out.
And what based on those numbers.
Sure. I'll give you a couple good examples for people that are, like, a little lost in the clouds right now. You know, a lot of times we render these things out and the PCD looks, you know, the wheel looks proportionally great. And then we're like, you know what? We really need an M5120 for the new Civic Type R and for some BMW guys. Well, 5120 is a much bigger bigger bowl pattern. It kicks
like
out
radius.
More. Yeah. So when you do that, what happens is the PCD needs to get larger. Well, the PCD larger does two things. One, it makes the back pad taller. Right. So that means if you have brakes that come down low, they're going to more likely to be clipped. The second thing is you immediately shorten up the spokes.
Right.
Now, aesthetically, that could be something that's displeasing to people. But if you want it to fit 520 cars, you don't have a choice, right?
There are a lot of factors that go into making a wheel.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's simply put, you can't. The more I listen to you talk, the more I realize, like, you can't boil this down to any one thing.
That's right. That's right.
You really can't.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a really good way of putting it. Let's see. What did he say? 2D development is a good approach. I'm reading a comment from YouTube. 2D development is a good approach. I'm currently experimenting with developing my own body kit parts. I'm using 2D drawing to quickly conceptualize the idea.
Nice.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting is, you know, you got Paco in the room, you know, of 2F Performance.
Yeah, right? What are the chances?
And you know, he was actually in the podcast last week.
Right.
And he talked a lot about how he started and, you know, started with that Corvette bumper and really did a lot of sketching and different things.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, 2D drawings can take you fairly far. And then I think right as you get to the point where you feel comfortable with those, you progress almost. You almost graduate into that 3D model. And you start to look at it so you can move the lines and the angles and watch the lighting change around different details.
Whereas some people just sort of park their cars in the garage or their parents' garage and throw a whole bunch of, that foam stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen those videos.
That's how they make the plugs a lot. Like, they do it for, instead of clay, they're...
I went down such a rabbit hole with that, you know? And they just sort of park the car in the garage, they spray a whole mess of that stuff on, and then they just start shaping with a knife for...
Oh, you're talking about they use, like, the can of foam.
Yeah, literally.
Because I've seen the...
They do it... So they do, like, a basic shape.
Did I miss it? Did you miss what?
Basic shaping with, you know, say, cardboard and whatnot.
Yeah.
But then they just spray, like, a whole mess of that, and I'm blanking on the name of it.
Well, it's like that... It's like the insulation, the foam insulation.
Right. And then, like I said, they just take a knife, and they just start, for days and weeks, they just start shaping to how... They like it, and they skip the sketching altogether. Is what I'm trying to say.
I understand, because they do a more physical product, like how they used to do it at Ford back in the day, kind of thing, or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, I've seen that stuff, and basically, what happens is, like, you have that, not the canned stuff. We know about the canned stuff, but I'm saying, like, the stuff that really should be used is that they have it in, like, different bottles, right?
It was an Instagram question up above.
Oh,
Alex,
okay.
Maybe we missed one. Can you scroll back up just so we could see the Instagram question?
So basically what happens is, like, they put this two-part stuff together, and this stuff grows.
Here
crazy.
We go. That's what it is.
So an Instagram question from the Sleepy Hollow. I need a myth wheel and four lug. I have one set already with a blue clear coat. Okay. I want a matching set for my second car, which is four lug. Is this possible? I'm going to say it's not that it's not possible, but it's fairly difficult, and we probably wouldn't do it. So you have a myth already? No.
No, he said needs
so
one.
So here's the problem. Here's the problem with doing, I mean, we're kind of off topic here. This is not the Instagram question that I thought we were going to get.
But, I know.
So basically the problem, man, is that when you develop a wheel that's almost traditionally catered to be a five lug wheel, and if you look at the myth, it's a split spoke design, right? So it's a five split spoke design. The PCD is very difficult to now render. Are we losing battery again?
Can't see. It was at
100. I like your style, Alex. When you render that wheel out, basically what's going to happen is you can't really put four holes in it. There's no place to physically. I wish I had the wheel here, but like, it's not.
Right, but how does that work? Because if it's a five lug, that would mean that there should be enough space for four.
Because if you look at the wheel design itself, all right, there's different types of PCDs.
You have a piece of paper, you can draw it.
Yeah, but nobody's going to want to see my sketch.
I don't know.
There's different types of PCDs. And what I mean by PCD is the area where the lug holes go around. And if you could see, like, on this tandem here, or even I'm moving my finger this way, even right here, I'm going in reverse. even right here, when we look at, the countergram, that circular PCD, that bowl type PCD, what happens there is it allows you to shift the pattern where you need to without really having a big problem.
Within the five lug arena is what you're saying, right?
Yeah, but or even in four lug. Like, you could put any circle lug into that area because that area doesn't change.
Right.
Like, think about if there was no holes. That circular area wouldn't change. It's already outlined.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Like, can't you just put four lugs in there?
In something like this, but now in a myth,
okay,
where it's split and they're actually put between the spokes. If you have split five spokes, where do you put the hole? It doesn't work. So in a myth, that's traditionally why we wouldn't do it in four lug, because it not only does it not look good, but it just you start to drill into different parts of the spoke, and then testing has to happen.
Well, I have a solution.
Yeah,
just convert to five lug.
Right. Yeah, I agree. It would be way more cost effective for you to convert to five lug than it is for us to produce a four lug wheel. But I understand the concern. It stinks. I get it. Shoddy Shot said great stuff, which is referring to the brand of insulating foam from the can.
Yeah.
There's plenty of other manufacturers, but there's also in the body kit world, Paco, if he's still here, he probably could
quit.
Oh, I'm sure he did. But he replied. Using foam, great stuff, from creating a plug mold is acceptable. The problem is when people leave it under the fiberglass and paint it.
Oh no, you have to remove it.
Oh, that's
no.
crazy. You gotta lay the fiberglass on top of it and then get rid of the foam.
Well, and I think that's why a lot of more professionals will take pieces of wood and fabricate something within that foam structure, so that when the fiberglass is laid on and it dries, you can then use the wood to help pull off the foam.
But so now I thought when it came, I thought, you know,
I could be wrong.
Did you get my question from Insta? I have Luis. I don't know if Luis is here, if he's sleeping. Shoddy Shot, throw the question back in. So here's my thing. My thing is this, is that I think a lot of times what happens is they pour this foam stuff, and I'm not talking about great stuff from the can. They actually have, and Paco might know this, I mean, he does know this better than I do, but there's like this special foam growth stuff that they have. There's two parts. You mix one-to-one piece.
Oh,
whatever,
and it expands.
And it expands. It's the same type of premise, but it's made so it gives you, and so what they do is they stuff like cardboards off the straight edge, and they basically pour this stuff over, make like almost like a form, like you would in concrete.
Right.
They dump this stuff in, take the thing off, then they shape down their panel, then they lay fiberglass over it, and then when they take that off the car, they basically just get rid of the foam, and they have their plug.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what you're supposed to do.
Polyurethane foam. Thank you, Paco.
We should just get him back on the podcast. Like,
we're just going to do a random guest appearance.
Come on in.
But polyurethane foam. So these guys, they use that stuff, and that's how they create the kits. How do we get – this is completely far off from our topic.
Because GTS
– Yes,
GT4, I forget his name. Sorry.
Question from – can we send you a diagram of a big brake kit to see if the wheels fit? Yes, absolutely. You can absolutely do that. You send it to fitment@koenigwheels.com, and we can check that for you. The only thing I will say is right now we have I was just talking whether it was me that jumps in sometimes to help those or whatever it may be. We are fairly backed up. I think we're at one point in race season we were backed up like 2 weeks or so, but I think we're down to like 4 or 5 days. So just bear with us. We'll do our best to check it if you send it in.
So
Sleepy Hollow.
the whole thing started because we were talking about sketching in 2D and all that kind of stuff, and one of our commenters was saying that he's doing own kits.
Got it.
So that's
But kind of circling back to the wheel portion of it. Yeah, like you could see, like even the PCD example, those technical things all change the way a wheel looks, right? So we have to be cognizant of that. Then you run into the issue of big brake clearance. We're going to pick up a brake. We're going to decide what our fitments are going to fit. And then what we're going to do is we're going to apply those 2D drawings the same way as checking a big brake kit. We're going to apply all those brake drawings that we've acquired in our library to make sure that, like, if we're going to have, let's say when we look at our part number list, our intention is to make an 18 by 8.5, 501/12, 43 offset. Well, we're going to want to check some of the entry-level Mercedes for us. We're going to want to check the brakes on, you know, GTI performance brake. We're going to check, you know, Golf R brake. We're going to want to we're going to go through the 501/12 hard-to-fit brakes and so make sure that they work.
Right. So in other words, you're not just throwing out random bits of information like, okay, we're going to use this bolt pattern. We're going to go one step further and make sure that they fit.
In every single bolt pattern, in every single offset, we test what we call hard-to-fit target cars to make sure. And what happens is you start to get this 2D line where you see the profile of the wheel, then you drop the brake in and you're like, oh, crap, it hits here. And what we'll do is we'll do that with all the different offsets, and we use markers, and we actually mark every single spot where we have an interference. Mm-hmm. And then we have to go back and we have to make one of two decisions. One, do we modify the spoke to clear the marker? Mm-hmm. Or two, do we say it's not really important to have that fit that car? Now, it's really become more difficult in more modern days to do that, and here's why. Years ago, if a wheel didn't clear a car, it just didn't fit, right?
The end.
The end. Like, you know, people didn't – like, I remember, you know, when I first got into cars, like, if you ran a 17 by 8 wheel, it was considered fairly large. You know, and if you were in an 18, you were there, yeah. Right? And then, you know, this whole thing of 19 and 20 and 20, like, this is a progression that's happened with time and stuff like that. And obviously, tires have kind of also come to the table and make more
and caught up, yeah, right.
But, you know, years ago, like if it didn't fit your car, if it didn't clear your brake, or I mean, maybe used a little spacer or something like that, but it just didn't fit. Yeah. Now, you know, like you'll tell somebody like, oh, like it's too low of an offset. And they're like, oh, it's fine. I'll figure it out. Like,
I mean,
there's more forgivingness in the mindset of making things work.
Well, and I'm just a quick tidbit. I'm 100% guilty of that.
I understand.
With the Baja.
Yeah.
Because I have 18 by 9.5s. They got to be something like I calculated, say, a 27 offset.
By the time you get done with the spacer.
Well, yeah, then you factor in.
Yeah.
Then, of course, you factor in the fact that they're 5x114, so right. I have an 11mm adapter.
Yeah.
It's like the lengths that I went
to make those wheels fit
is ridiculous.
Right.
It's but absolutely ridiculous.
So a guy like you does that, and all of a sudden, we now have to almost learn what each segment is willing to do to decide. If it doesn't clear that brake, a good example for me right off the top of my head is Q50 guys. Q50 sport guys have a fairly large Akabono brake. And on the Akabono brake, it's, again, sport brakes. The car doesn't really want a really wide wheel at a really low offset. So 18.5 at around a 35 or 19.5 around a 35 is kind of where that car needs to live. I see Alex run with a power cord. Scares me a little bit. Are we still?
Every time.
Are we still going? Are we still live? We're still live. So basically what happens here is you can't just go lower on offset, but sometimes those guys do. So when we build an 18.5 at a 35, if for some reason that wheel, like especially like a B profile or something, if it doesn't clear that Akabona sport brake, mm-hmm. we have to sit there and really think, is it worth changing the spoke of the wheel for everybody else for this application? Or is it likely that that car and those group of people, when they want that wheel, may be willing to make it work?
Right. And how much
effort would it take?
How much effort will it take? But also, is it worth sacrificing potentially the design of the wheel? Right.
Yeah.
Like there's that's a component of it.
Yeah. Listen, there's plenty of times we'll get an email or something will come in and people will say things like, I wish you would have made it more concave like this company. And then I go and look.
Right.
And the minimum width that they offer, we may have it and they want to put the 18.5 43 on their car.
Mm-hmm.
Then I go look at this company that they told me about. And the first time that they even offer this wheel is at an 18.10.5 at a 12.
like comparing apples to mangoes.
Right. It's like comparing apples to like pasta. It's not even this, you know what I mean? And I'm like, oh my God, you can't have big concave movements in really narrow, high offset wheels. It just doesn't work that way. So that's why we have the reason to do those A and B profiles. A has more caliper clearance and they tend to be a little bit more forgiving around brakes. B is more concave, less forgiving on brakes, but has a cooler look.
Right.
So we have to figure out both. But now the question that commonly comes is, well, why don't you just do them all? Well, because every single wheel that we make, we have to hold X amount of wheels on the shelf. We can't just make one set of four. So there's a costing there. There's a cost in tooling. Different molds have to give it make. Now when the wheel costs you X amount of dollars, now the price changes. And so the other factor of all this R&D that we've just done, because now in the wheel process, look at the wheel process, right? We told you we did loose designs up until about April. Then we go to more technical stuff. Then we check the brake calipers and stuff. Then the wheel's got to go back to FEM.
Mm-hmm.
After we do all these changes, we've now changed the original FEM.
Because you've literally changed the structure of the wheel.
That's right.
So
now the wheel goes back to FEM. We check. We make sure it's good. It surpasses by X amount of percentage, whatever. Now we look at the whole thing, and if there's no other changes, which there always are, let's say there's no other changes. We're done. We figured out the wheel. This looks great. Let's do this. We figured out the offsets, the fitments. Everything is there and ready to go. Then we're at that point where we're going to start to approve molds and start to produce the wheel,
mm-hmm.
right?
And time frame on that, you figure you're at what? May? Not June,
well,
July?
In a typical year, let's say we get done with the drawing stages by August, beginning of August.
Drawing stages as in?
As in all the drawings for every single size and every single bolt pattern and every single offset's been checked. We've gone through that. We've run through FEM. We've done the whole thing.
What's up?
He's trying to stay awake.
Oh, no.
This is very entertaining. I can feel this.
Oh yeah,
Paco says everybody wants something custom until the price is mentioned.
Yep,
yeah,
100%.
That's 100% what it is. So anyhow, so we get to this stage, and we have, done all that stuff, and then let's say we make it, and now it's got to get put through, they produce the mold. The mold, on average, so let's say we finish that thing in August, it takes about 30 to 45 days to get that mold created. Or to come up with the programming or whatever we're going to need.
Mm-hmm.
And then what we do is we basically, the thing gets done. It goes into physical tests, which means we develop some. And that's when they go through all their hard rigid testing, the actual physical test, the
like
impact
dropping
test,
them off a 12-story building,
right? Yeah. The impact test, the radial test, the you know, I mean the whole nine, yeah. and that usually takes about 2 weeks, right? So now let's say it takes 60 days to go from that point. So now you go from mid August or whatever it may be to mid September to mid October, and that's why you always see those wheels kind of get air freighted in for
SEMA.
Yeah. Now we've tried for many, many years to get done with wheel design super early. Just doesn't really happen. You know, like you have so many things and so much that has to go into each wheel, and in addition to that, we're always trying to get, like, people say, like, how many people does it go through? It's not really a set number of people, but we all look at it, we all have opinions, we all have different cars that we like. And so we may debate on a wheel for weeks. You know, like we may make changes and look at one, and we may go, like, you know, like you ever go to have your eyes done, and they go, like when you have your, like, an eye exam.
Oh, God, I haven't had one in a decade.
Well,
least.
In an eye exam, they usually put up the different letters and they go, which one's better? One, two. One,
yeah,
two.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. We sit to them, like, with three of them that look almost identical to everybody outside this world, but they look different to us.
Right.
And we look at them and we go, is it one, two, or three? It's like, I like two. And then you get the guy that's got to come up and say, well, I like two, but can you do this part from three on two? Yeah. And then you're like, And then sometimes you humor them and sometimes you don't.
And before you know it, your brain explodes.
Yeah, yeah. And this stuff goes on for weeks. And then you know, you may have – and so think about now, even in the car stage, the fitment process takes a long time. Because you're going to make sure that in that fitment process, you're checking all these different cars and all these different vehicles. And every single time you have an interference, you may change this or change that. Or then if you do an offset change, like you decide, you know what, we really should do this at this offset. It all starts over again.
Yeah.
You got to check all those things again and make sure. So these are the things that make the wheel design process very tedious and can potentially take a lot longer. So, you know, it's one of those things. It just does take time to get something done, and we would never release anything before it's ready. And then the last thing that we'll talk about is the load rating of all these wheels, you know?
Yeah.
Load rating directly relates to how much a wheel can hold statically, but it also indirectly translates to how much a wheel can take, you know, from, you know, corner loads and different things like that. Under weight transfer, like if you're taking a corner or something like that. And we need to find the happy medium between lightweight and or acceptable weight and correct load rating. It has to meet the minimum code load rating that we need to have for certain vehicles. Now, that most likely well exceeds the load rating your vehicle actually needs.
Right.
But we know from experience certain load ratings that we want to build to based off of the vehicles it's going on to give X amount of buffer. And there's even more of a buffer usually than is advertised. We just don't consider that, right? If we make a wheel that's supposed to be, let's say, at 690 kg, which is 1,521 pounds, and the wheel tests out closer to 1,600 pounds, it doesn't mean we're going to put 1,600.
Mm-hmm.
We'll still probably put where
we're
going to
err on the side of caution.
Yeah, and we intend there to be a buffer, you know, generally about 10% over what we produce of. That's just good practice, right? So it's just one of those things where I think that, you know, there's so much that goes on, and there's way more, right? There's way more, you know. How do lightning holes come in, cavity backs on the back of wheels so that certain things fit, and the hardware, you know, different things, you know, extra material. I mean, because here's the thing. We finish all these things, and then before we even get into the physical mold stage, we finish all this stuff, and on all the flow form wheels, then we send the wheel back, and we start trying to find extra aluminum we can remove in areas that won't change the strength. And that takes a while too. You know, you'll see if you turn over a back of a wheel, I don't have one right now, but like sometimes there'll be these random like machined cut-ins and stuff in the back of a spoke and or different holes or whatever. that stuff is to remove aluminum where it's not necessary, and we do the FEM, and everything comes out exactly the same because we're trying to remove material for you, and that stuff takes an enormous amount of time. So, you know, sometimes when we get delayed, like this was a good example. 2020 was the year of 1,000 kicks to the groin. Yeah. And so what happens is, you know, along that process, you know, we were working hard to do other things to make sure there was a work from home period. There was this, there was that. And our typical normal process experienced a delay. Right. And so it's just translating through, and we're behind a little bit. So we have the designs done. We're in right now. We are in the final stages of drawings and checking calipers and back and forth and back and forth. We're right there.
But nothing physically has been produced yet.
And so we're just on that cusp of saying okay to a lot of different things. And what happens is not everything's approved all at one time. Like, in other words, you know, some people say, like, why we there's certain sizes that we know are A sizes or sell more than others or people desire more than others, and we'll start turning those molds out first, mm-hmm. right? So we approve a drawing, and that maybe that mold goes, and then we approve another drawing, and that mold goes. And so it's not like an all or nothing thing. There's a lot of times we're already cooking on a lot of different things, but it's just not all at one time, right?
Yeah. Well, it also sounds like, you know, that independently of, you know, however many delays you guys have had, you're still not cutting corners on any aspect right. of the process, which yeah. I think is really important.
Oh, it's really important. You know, because here's the thing. We can deal with a wheel that comes out a few months later. Like, it's not a perishable item. There's a seasonality to it, but not perishable, right? Like, the worst going to happen is maybe we didn't have it in time for a certain part of the season, but making sure that the wheel is exactly what we wanted it to be when it comes out is really important. And it does take a lot of time to do it. And, you know, and then there's the contemplation, the times that, you know, we try to listen to as much feedback as possible. And which is why when you put your feedback out there, we really do ask, be specific. Like, pretend like you're legitimately trying to put this information out there because you want to buy it.
Like you're in the meeting room with us.
Yeah, because we look at that and then we do our own research on that and then we see if it's possible. There's plenty of times that, like, for example, the guys that say, oh, can you take this 15-inch wheel and drill it 5-lug? Well, first off, you didn't tell us what bowl pattern it was, didn't tell us what car it was, what offset it was. But let's hypothetically say all those things we knew. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, the load rating on the 15-inch wheels are – the reason the wheel is so light is because the fact that we don't need as much of a load rating to put on a Civic, a Miata, or you know, anything like that. So as soon as you change the gamut and you say, oh, well, now let's make it in 5-lug. Mm. That 5-lug car that he wants to put it on may weigh, you know, 3,800 pounds. And you can't do that with the load rating that those other cars use it in 400. So that mold will not work for your car. So we have two options in development. One, we sacrifice the guys that are going to buy it in the 4-lug stuff, and we make the wheel way heavier so it has the load rating for the 5-lug car.
And hopefully it clears brakes and all that other stuff
right.
that we talked about.
Or two, we decide not to make it. And that's typically why I don't see a lot of 15-inch 5-lug stuff. But you think I explained this whole process
I would say so.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot more to it, but, you know, I hope that this kind of explains, one, what's going on, you know, with our designs, why they're maybe a little bit late, and two, kind of what goes into it and what kind of work and effort and continuously. We are always working on new stuff, and it just takes a lot. It takes a lot of time.
I mean, maybe the only other aspect you could touch on is like, what goes into visually making a design. And what I mean by that specifically is, you know, at a certain point, it's a circle. Yeah. So that, like, there's in the confines of that, how creative can you be get at a certain, yeah. you know, it's almost like music where at a certain point, like, where's the difference yeah. in, you know, song A versus song B, you know? So
Well, I'll let our viewers hear in on a little secret, right? I don't know if it's really a secret. So basically, here's the thing. We have started to do wheels, and without even looking at any other, like, if you, like, let's say we lock ourselves in a dark room. This happened all the time. You start, you know, the one thing I really try to do is when we start designs, we try not to look at anything. Because even if you look at your own stuff when you start out trying to make a wheel, you will just, your mind grabs pieces, right? So you'll start out making a wheel. You will have no inspiration except for just, oh, you know what? We should do something like seven spoke. We don't have a lot of seven spoke in our range, right? And you know what? Let's do something without a lip, because we've done some lip wheels recently. And let's make it flow formed, and let's do it from this PCD range to this PCD range. And, you know, we should definitely try to go for some lightnings and stuff, as light as we can make it. Peace out.
GMS GT4.
Yeah. I should probably just learn these people's names. You'll do all this stuff, and your first rendering will come back, and you'll be like, eh, not loving it. Like, it's all right. So you'll be like, you know what? Let's bend this spoke like this. Let's put a radius here. Let's do a cut here. How about a PCD? Let's recess this part. Mm-hmm. Let's push this part over here. Let's do a cut on the side of the spoke, and let's do the webbing around the wheel window, so it kind of like looks like it's a step, like a recessed cut, mm-hmm. right? And then we'll get done, and we'll say, all right, you know what? It would be cool if we did this like machining thing here, and then anyhow, bottom line is you'll get done with all these things that you just said let's do. And you get done with the wheel, and you're like, damn it, like this looks exactly like this wheel. It happens more than you can imagine. And so when people see a design sometimes, and they're like, that looks like this wheel, listen, I'm not gonna say that there's not other things out there that try to replicate. This is not what we're doing anymore. Well, don't do this.
But like, what you're saying just sort of proves my point. If there is
that's where I was,
which
saying,
is to say that like you're in the confines of a circle.
You know that saying, you can't reinvent the wheel. To an extent, it's fairly accurate. No, but we try to do the different things and whatever it may be. And, you know, sometimes what's weird is, like, you'll walk yourself backward. It's happened so many different ways. Like, you'll start out here developing this wheel and doing this whole thing, and then you'll be like, yeah, that's it. And then you'll have to make changes to get load rating back as you start FEMing it.
Yeah, yeah.
We got to change this. And you get done, and either it doesn't look like the way you wanted it to, or you're like, now that like completely looks like this wheel.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's so easy. But so sometimes when people say, you know, that wheel looks like just like this wheel, I'll look at it and be like, they don't look the same at all. The subjectiveness of a wheel design, when you can look at a wheel and somebody could say, like, you know, like for the average person, they may look at the wheel and go, oh, that's an 8-spoke and it's black. That's an 8-spoke and it's black. That one doesn't have a lip. That one doesn't have a lip. Like, that one has a PCD that drops down. That one is a PCD drop down. And to them, that's what they see.
Right.
But for me, I'm like, well, this one's got a totally different drop in. This has got a different profile to the spoke. This has got different cuts and webbings. This has got details here and detail. Like, in all those things, you know, they do make a difference. Like, yeah, it's coming from a wheel guy. So sometimes it's just not as clear. It's just not as clear cut as, just understand, this is a process that takes a long time. And then, you know, we go over and above to make sure that the wheel is tested and tested and tested and tested and tested again. We work all the kinks out before you ever get it. And, you know, we do our best to make sure that you get a finished product in a box. When you see our name on the side of the box, you can put it on your car, be very comfortable that you got all those things that I just spoke about.
Oh, we got a question.
How many designs do you start with before simulation, and how many do you try and end up with? So I think we've been doing this long enough where it's not – we don't try to set out and go, let's build two wheels. We just start building – like right now, I know I probably have four or five different designs in play. I know two – are going to be targeted for this year and will be done. you know, we, you know, we're all, I always have, we always have ideas for wheels.
There's no set number that,
right,
or goal that you have to reach, in other words.
Yeah. You know, you're always trying to come up with something new and fun. And but as far as the whole simulation thing, we render them out as a 2D rendering first. In other words, like, even as we go, as we start getting things, a 2D rendering is essentially like looking at a picture of a wheel, right? Like, that's what we render them out at initially. And we won't do a 3D rendering because it takes so much more time to build that initial rendering until we look at the 2D rendering and we're like, yeah, that's close. That looks pretty good. Then we get it into 3D stages. So if you're – I don't know what you mean by simulation, but if you do mean like FEM, that really comes toward the point where you looked at everything. You're like, yeah, that looks really good. And it's drawn in the right size and the bowl patterns. And then once we know that that's really where it should be, then we do FEM and make the changes to make it, you know, exceed the FEM standards that we're looking for.
So you have to have a level of commitment, basically, before you just sort of jump into the FEM and all that, right? Is what you're saying?
Well, and that's the right way to – when I say the right way, I think for us, that's the right way to do it, because what you're doing is – you're developing on hypothetical without the limitations. Mm-hmm. And you know, and if you really look at the entire wheel design process, it really is that. You start out very vague, mm-hmm, and in a very whimsical sense, right? Like, you can make any wheel look good in a rendering. I can make wheels look so concave that you would just not even believe it. And then we take this big, awesome wheel, and we start to put it, all right, now we make the right size. Now it's not as cool because it's not as wide, right? Now it goes higher offset. Now those spoke just physically can't be as concave. Then we start putting brakes in. Oh, it doesn't clear this. Now yeah. You see what happens? And what happens is the more information we start to load in,
right,
the more the wheel is adjusted. And the more the wheel is adjusted, it typically goes from being whimsical and you know, oh, so cool, to reality. And then we have to do our best to continue to shape reality to make it look as good as we want it to.
You start with a blank canvas using as much of your imagination as possible.
And we add detail, 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 detail. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And start making sacrifices, basically, right? To a degree.
Yeah, I mean, I like to think of them as very calculated refinements, right? There's plenty of times that we get done and the wheel looks so good just like the way it is. We're like, that's it. Like, what doesn't it fit? It doesn't fit this car.
Ah, damn.
All right. That's just not good. That's just going to be the way it is. They won't fit. We're going to sacrifice these cars. So like I said, FEM, the Mini GP. FEM is something that comes fairly... If you look at the whole process in entirety, it comes in the last, like, maybe the last third to, like, the last quarter of the design process. But it still takes a few months when you start watching, going through that whole, you know, total run through.
I was trying to see if we have any other
questions on there. Yeah. So,
'cause I'm not seeing anything here now.
But anyhow, with all of that said... I would say, that's pretty much it in a nutshell. And if you guys have any other questions about the wheel design, development, and stuff like that, throw them down below. We'll be happy to get to them. I'll circle them back around and try to pop in and answer any of those that come up. But we've had a lot of good questions on the live stream here. But like I said, as this kind of goes live and people see it and do different things, we can do our best to make sure that we, circle back around and answer those questions. And
yeah. Well, I mean, we got Paco showing up, so that's going to draw an audience, you know?
Yeah. Right.
Start Paco. Letting people know that he's in the,
right. Right. We'll start advertising it.
Right.
The place where you could touch Paco. Yeah. That didn't come out right at all. But with that said, I think you all know what I mean. Anyhow.
What a perfect time to sign off.
Yeah, that pretty much. Little, so that's it for this week. Not too much going on. On Friday, we will have a piece of content. So look for our YouTube video to pop up sometime on Friday. Alex, you feel pretty good about that? Friday? Alex feels pretty good about it. So Friday we'll have a piece of content going up. Make sure you check out that. Make sure you subscribe if you're not already. Tell your friends about the whole subscribe thing. We are going to be doing some giveaways. They're going to come through our YouTube channel in totality. And if you're not here to witness it on YouTube, you will miss out. We're not going to
turn those
cross
notifications on.
Yeah, right, exactly. So let that stuff go. Make sure you check out the content stuff. We've been putting up a lot, working real hard. Hopefully that pans out and you enjoy it. With that said, we will be back here next Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, as we always are. We'll do the live podcast. Next week's guest is
Flyride.
So Chris from Flyride will be here. And he does all the cool LED lighting combinations, and he his brand is really cool. He's got a YouTube channel. He's got like 80,000 subs, way better than we have. But he's a cool dude, and he's a lot of fun. And also, he has a lot of cool knowledge that we could talk about lighting and LED lighting and programming and doing all the cool things that you
that I could never attempt to even try.
Accurate. So that's it. Have a good week. And if you're bored, make sure you catch us on Wednesday at 2 p.m. on Instagram and Facebook, and 3 p.m. right here on YouTube. Take care, and we'll catch you later.